Freddie Sayers, editor-in-chief and CEO of Unheard, interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on May 3, 2023, 2 weeks after the latter announced he was running for President of the United States, challenging Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination. Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. is the third child of Robert Francis Kennedy, a former U.S. Attorney General, and nephew to Ted Kennedy and former President of the United States John Fitzgerald Kennedy. One of the topics covered during the interview is Mr. Kennedy's view of the Ukrainian conflict. We have excerpted the audio of that part of the interview, which we reproduce below. Please note that the sound of the interviewee's voice is due to the spasmodic dysphonia he suffers from.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. Robert Kennedy Jr. was 9 years old when his uncle, President Jack Kennedy, was assassinated. He was 14 when his father, Senator Bobby Kennedy, was himself assassinated on the cusp of what was starting to look like a historic victory. For decades, RFK Jr. was himself a hero of the Democratic establishment, advocating on behalf of environmental causes such as reducing pollution in rivers and waterways. But when he moved into more controversial areas, such as questions about the safety of vaccines, he became an outlier, the black sheep of the Kennedy family. To many people, his views on vaccines in particular have made him somewhat untouchable. In fact, I'm pretty sure after this interview, I will get messages asking why I'm quote unquote platforming someone who is committed to spreading misinformation. Well, first of all, we don't believe in the concept of no platforming at Unheard. We think it's stupid. Journalists are there to investigate and challenge views. So if this is the way you think, you probably should tune out now. Also, he's running for president, challenging Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination, and is already polling at 20% of voters of the governing party. So it seems a pretty important exercise to try to understand what he really thinks about the world. He joins me now. Welcome, Mr. Kennedy.
Thanks for having me.
One thing that you talk about a lot in your interviews, in your speeches, is America being in a permanent state of war and how you want to put an end to that. With regard to Ukraine, how do you propose to do that?
Settle it. I mean, the Russians have repeatedly offered to settle. And particularly, you know, if you look at the Minsk Accords, which the Russians, you know, offered to settle for, that looks like a really good deal today. Oh, you know, let's be honest, this is a U.S. war against Russia for geopolitical reasons that have been, you know, these geopolitical machinations that have been going on since 2014 with the intelligence agencies and the neocons. And to essentially sacrifice the flower of Ukrainian youth in an abattoir of death and destruction for the geopolitical ambition of the neocons, offstated, of deposing, of regime change for Vladimir Putin and of exhausting the Russian military so that they can't fight anywhere else in the world. And, you know, and President Biden has said that that was his intention to depose, to get rid of Vladimir Putin. His Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, in April 2022 said, our purpose here is to exhaust the Russian army. Well, what does that mean, exhaust? It means throwing Ukrainians at them. And, you know, my son fought over there side by side with the Ukrainians. And, you know, we've sacrificed 300,000 Ukrainians. The commander of the Special Forces Unit in the Ukraine, which is probably the most elite and, you know, the best fighting force in Europe, arguably, has said that 80% of his troops are dead or wounded and that they cannot rebuild the unit. Right now, Russians are killing Ukrainians at a ratio of either 1 to 5 or 1 to 8, depending on what data you believe.
If you became president, you would inherit the situation as it is. So although there might be missteps in the past that you regret, the situation as it is, that both sides are very dug in. Public opinion in most of Ukraine is now very violently against Russia and vice versa. There is a front what would the policy actually be to basically say territory that Russia has already conquered they can keep? And would you then be accused of surrendering?
Well, what I'm accused of is irrelevant to me, as you may have figured out by now. Let's do what's sensible, no matter what I'm accused of. Let's do what makes sense, what saves lives. This was supposed to be a humanitarian mission. That's how they sold it to us in the United States. But that would imply that the poor purpose of the mission was to reduce bloodshed and to shorten the conflict. And every step that we've taken has been to enlarge the conflict and to maximize bloodshed. That's not what we should be doing. If you look at the Minsk Accords, it sets the groundwork for a final settlement. In the Minsk Accords, the Donbas region, which is 80% ethnic Russian, and Russians that were being systematically killed by the Ukrainian government, would become autonomous within Ukraine and would be protected. And I would say, you know, let's protect those populations with a United Nations force or whatever we have to do to make sure the bloodshed stops. In addition to that, we need to remove our Aegis missile systems from, which can house the Tomahawk missile, which is a nuclear missile, 70 miles from the Russian border. When the Russians put nuclear missiles on in Cuba, 1,500 miles from Washington, D.C., we were ready to invade them, and we would have invaded them if they hadn't removed them. So, and the way they got removed ultimately is my uncle and father made a deal with Ambassador Dobrynin and Khrushchev, who they had a close relationship with and they could talk directly to at that point. And they said, the deal was, we will remove our Jupiter missiles from Turkey on your border because we know that's intolerable to you. Russia's been invaded twice in the previous 100 years with the vast cost that we can't even comprehend in the United States. And one could see why they wouldn't want U.S. nuclear missile systems in hostile countries on their border. We should also agree to keep to keep NATO out of the Ukraine, which is what the Russians have asked. And I think based upon those three points, we could somebody like me could settle this war. I don't think the neocons are capable of settling it, and the people who surround President Biden, I don't think they're capable of, because they were the ones who created the problems, and I don't think they'll ever recognize that. I think part of a Russian settlement is to recognize that some of this history that went into this war with them, with the geopolitical machinations on both sides. And by the way, I am not excusing or justifying Vladimir Putin's barbaric and illegal invasion of the Ukraine. I'm just saying we need to figure out a way. My uncle always said, if you want to actually achieve peace, you've got to put yourself in the other guy's shoes, and you've got to figure out the pressures, the local pressures on him too.
I mean, you mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis there and your uncle's strategy. You could look at that another way, which is that he stared them down with that. I mean, it was a very frightening moment. Would the ships turn around? He played chicken and he won, in a sense, with that standoff. But there was a real sense that facing that kind of aggression, you have to take a firm stand. And I think it's not just corporate interest. There are lots of good people who feel about the Russian invasion of Ukraine that it is just such a moment, and that somehow a stand needs to be taken and he can't be rewarded for it, rather like your uncle did at the Cuban Missile Crisis. What do you say to those people?
Well, I can argue the history of it, and I can also argue my uncle, while he was, he was surrounded by a military, by Joint Chiefs of Staff, by an intelligence apparatus that was trying to get him to go to war. And the fact that there was one confrontation where the Russian ship that was carrying supplies to Cuba stopped before it hit the kind of the embargo wall of U.S. ships. That wasn't the end of the crisis. That was just a midpoint, and it could have gone anywhere from there. And the end of the crisis happened because my uncle reached out to Khrushchev directly and said, let's settle this between ours. And their settlement was secret, and it remained secret for many years. But my uncle wanted to settle it, and he understood that he had to put himself in Khrushchev's position, and that Khrushchev didn't want war, and neither did he. But they were both surrounded by people who did want to go to war.
But what is the wise equivalent thing that the U.S. president should have done when Russian tanks started rolling across Ukrainian borders in three different directions headed to the capital?
Well, I mean, we should have listened maybe to Putin over many years. You know, we made a commitment to Russia, to Gorbachev, that we would not move NATO one inch to the east. So, you know, why did we, then we went in and we lied. We went into 13 NATO countries. We put missile systems in that with nuclear capacity. We did joint exercises with the Ukraine and these others from NATO. What is the purpose of NATO? In NATO, this is what, you know, George Kennan asked. This is what Jack Matlock asked. All of the, you know, the doyens of U.S. foreign policy were saying, Russia lost the Cold War. Let's do to Russia, for Russia, what we did to Europe when we gave them the Marshall Plan. We're the victors. Let's help them, lift them up. Let's integrate them into European society.
So you would have had Russia inside NATO.
I think that that's something we should have considered. What is the purpose of NATO other than to oppose Russia? And if you're addressing Russia hostily from the beginning, of course their reaction is going to be a hostile reaction back. And if you're slowly moving in, so that all of these states who we said would never become part of NATO were suddenly become part of NATO, you know, and then, you know, and we know what happened in the Ukraine. In the U.S. Supported essentially a coup d'etat in 2014 against a democratically elected government of Ukraine. And we put in place, and we now have, you know, the telephone call transcripts. Victoria Nuland, one of the neocons in the White House then, handpicking the new cabinet that was hostile to the Soviet Union. And so, you know, if you look at that and you put yourself in Russia's position and you say, okay, the United States, our biggest enemy that's treating us as an enemy, has now taken over the government of a nation and made them hostile to us, and then start, you know, passing laws that are prejudicial to this giant Russian population. If Mexico did that and then started killing, they killed 14,000 Russians in Donbass, the Ukrainian government. If Mexico did that to expatriate Americans, we'd invade in a second. So, you know, I think we have to put ourselves in the shoes of our opponents. And it doesn't mean saying that Vladimir Putin is not a gangster. He is. That he's not a thug. He is. That he's not a bully. He is. But going to war is not in his interest either. And he repeatedly told us, these are red lines you're caught crossing.
The challenge is that we are where we are now. And day by day, the news emerges of some of the atrocities happening inside the Russian-controlled parts of Ukraine. And the idea that it's going to slip back to peaceful Minsk style accords is maybe not realistic at this point. So should we take it from what you're saying that in practice that means your support for NATO as president would be different to what
you know? I don't know, but that is something that I'm going to look at as president. I'm going to look at how do we de-escalate tensions between the great powers, between China, between the United States and Russia. And, you know, how do we let these countries deal with their neighbors in a way without pressure from the United States that makes them feel like they're going to have to go into a military mode? And I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm saying that's something that we need to look at. And the reason that we need to look at that is we have institutional problems in our country where something my uncle discovered in 1960, 61, when he said, what he realized during the Bay of Pigs crisis is that the CIA had devolved into an agency whose function was to provide the military-industrial complex with a constant pipeline of new wars. And my uncle came out of one of those meetings as the Bay of Pigs invasion collapsed, and he said, and he realized the CIA had lied to him, and he fired, ultimately, Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, Charles Cabell, Richard Bissell, the three top people of the CIA, for lying to him. But he said at that time, I want to take the CIA and shatter it into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. We have to recognize that, you know, it's not just our civilian agencies that have been captured by industry. The military agencies, the Pentagon, and particularly the intelligence agencies have been captured by the military-industrial complex. And, you know, and we have to recognize that, and we have to say, okay, we don't want constant wars in our country. We can't afford them.
So do you see yourself finishing the job they started then? Do you want to take the CIA and shatter it into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind?
I think the CIA needs to be reorganized in a way. You know, most of the people who work at the CIA are patriotic Americans. They're very, very good public servants, and we need them to function. But I think we really need to separate the espionage functions of that agency and the plans division, the division that actually does dirty tricks, that kills people, that makes wars, that, you know, that involves itself in actions, because what happens is that tail, that the operations tail begins to wag the espionage dog. The term espionage means basically information gathering and analysis, and that is the function that we want that the CIA was created to perform. And very, very early on, Alan Dulles essentially, you know, corrupted the purpose of it by getting the CIA involved in, you know, assassinations and fixing elections. And the CIA has been involved now in fixing in coup d'etats or attempted coup d'etats in about a third of the countries in the world, most of them democracies. So our national policy as a country is to promote democracy. The CIA's policy has been the opposite, and it has been at odds with the United States. So, and I think part of that, my father recognized this too, his plan was to reorganize the CIA along those lines, to separate the espionage and the analysis and information gathering functions from the, you know, the black functions, because otherwise the espionage section sees its job as justifying all of these these nefarious activities they're involved in, and there's no accountability. So there's never any accountability. And they do, you know, you overthrow a government in Iraq, and what happens? You create ISIS. You then get involved in Syria from ISIS, and you drive 2 million civilian or 2 million refugees into Europe, which destabilizes democracy all over Europe and basically causes Brexit. And that is the, you know, that's the outcome of what the CIA considers a successful operation to depose Saddam Hussein. Is it really successful? I don't think so. And unfortunately, you know, we have a 60-year war with Iraq, and that war began when the CIA overthrew the first democratically elected government in the 6,000-year history of Persia. And we are still living with the blowback from that operation. And there's no accountability, and these agencies need to be accountable, and I would break up the CIA in a way that would make them accountable.
You have just listened to the passage about the conflict in Ukraine from the interview that Freddie Sayers, editor-in-chief and CEO of Unheard, conducted with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on May 3, 2023. For further information on the conflict in Ukraine, you can visit Akiba Nizkor's related webpage. This program was produced by Radio Nizkor at our studios in Belgium on the 10th of May 2023.